Welcome to the B2B Influence Spotlight on Industry Game Changers podcast. I'm Paula Keoki, founder and CEO of Outward Media. Outward Media is a trusted data partner to Fortune 2000 businesses and startups alike. We provide the highest quality audience data to fuel engaged, integrated, omnichannel campaigns. Our mission is to deliver real data, real results, and invaluable reach to real people. Welcome, everyone, to the Marketing Vanguard Leading Voices in B2B Innovation. I'm Paula Keoki, CEO of Outward Media. I'm your host for the podcast. And today we're fortunate enough to have Dr. Augustine Fu. He is the founder and CEO of Fu Analytics. And Dr. Fu specializes in something I think everybody would be interested in, exposing ad fraud for online advertising on the internet. Welcome, Dr. Fu.
Thank you, Paula. Great to be here with you.
Thank you. So regarding ad fraud, Dr. Fu, how should marketers rethink audience targeting to ensure they're reaching real engaged humans rather than bots? And then post that, how do you determine attribution in today's world?
Great question. Maybe let me take a step back and define ad fraud first. I think a lot of people have heard of it, but they may not have a clear definition of it in their mind. So the first part of it is you mentioned bot traffic. Mm-hmm. So for the past 15 years, as more and more of the ad dollars go into programmatic channels, that means the advertisers are really not sitting across the table from a real publisher like a New York Times or CNN. They're literally buying ads kind of in bulk from an ad exchange. Okay. And the way to think of an ad exchange is just like you have Wall Street that brings together buyers and sellers of shares of stock. The ad exchanges brings together buyers and sellers of individual ad impressions that you bid on.
Okay.
And so in those cases, when the ad exchanges became the dominant way of buying ads about 15 years ago, it created the opportunity for bad guys to create tens of thousands of fake websites and just add them into the exchange. Because now, instead of buying direct from a publisher that you actually get to look in the eye, you're buying ads from the exchange. And the exchange places the ads on all those tens of thousands of long tail websites. Okay. And in losing sight of who you're actually buying from, that created this opportunity for fraud. So those fake websites don't have any human visitors because humans simply don't know about them. So what they're doing is they're using bot traffic to create the page views and therefore create the ad impressions to sell. So to the advertiser, they may end up buying kind of the tonnage, right? A lot of ad impressions, thinking that they're getting a lot of reach and a lot of frequency. But in fact, a lot of those, a large percentage of those ads are actually shown to software programs, i.e. the bots and not the humans. Okay, so that's one aspect of it. And in digital advertising, there are four main revenue types. So the first one is called CPM, right? Cost per thousand. And that's one of the main places where the bot activity is draining budgets, right? They just have to generate the ad impressions. The second is called CPC, which means cost per click. And that really affects search advertising because you have to click on the ad in order to get paid on the click. So in those cases, the bots not only generate the search ad impression, they also click on it. Okay.
Wow.
So those first two buckets are the majority of the ad spend.
Okay.
But increasingly, we're seeing that the advertisers are realizing that in the third and fourth buckets, there's also fraud.
Okay.
So the third bucket is what we would call cost per lead. And very often, financial services or maybe university marketers would pay on a cost per lead basis, thinking, oh, we won't pay for the impression. We don't even pay for the click. We're going to pay for the outcome, which is a lead that is collected. But as you can imagine, the bots can complete the lead forms as well. So you have to be very careful about that. And that gets into some of the audience question that you had, and I'll get to that in just one second.
Okay.
And then just to round out the fourth bucket is what we call CPA, cost per action, cost per acquisition, or otherwise sales, right? You actually get the sales. In that last case, it's really about falsifying the attribution. They're not necessarily using bots because bots don't buy stuff.
Okay.
It's really about claiming credit for purchases that humans actually make.
Okay.
So for example, a human that already knows Macy's.com will probably go and buy something from Macy's.com again. That second purchase probably should not be attributed to an ad impression or a type of ad. But yet the way the reporting is set up, right? Like you said, the second part of your question is attribution fraud has to do with falsifying the attribution to claim credit for purchases that had already occurred or that will occur anyway in the absence of advertising. So I think the best way for the advertisers to go about this is to really understand that every form of digital advertising can be taken advantage of by bad guys. So we always have to keep our guard up to be vigilant and look for telltale signs. And very often it's almost like going back to children's parables. It's if it's too good to be true, it's probably too good to be true, right?
Yeah.
You got to look into it. It can't be that successful, right? Something might be wrong or somebody might be gaming the system if it looks that good.
One of the things you mentioned though on the cost per lead, how can you, if it's a fake lead, doesn't the client end up finding out this person doesn't exist or they can't get a hold of it?
Yeah, very often afterwards. So they've already paid for the lead, right? Whether it's $5 a lead, $10 a lead, $300 a lead, depending on the industry. They will later, like the university marketers, and this goes back to 13, more than 10 years ago when I served university marketers, they would just follow up with the high schooler and just call them up and say, oh, thanks for your application. And then the high schooler will say, I didn't apply to your college. I didn't fill out that lead form. So you've heard of these data breaches, right?
Yeah.
So the bad guys basically have all of our information. So they can instruct the bots to complete the lead forms with completely accurate information about the high schoolers. First name, last name, home address, high school mascot, mother's maiden name, everything can be correct.
Wow.
And the high schooler would have never actually applied. So I'll give you a simple example to think about this, right? If we have proper detection on the lead form, right? And I'm doing this for financial services now. Something so simple, a bot can complete the lead form in 1 second because they can just fill out the form fields in the form and just submit it. And you don't see any keystrokes. A human can't actually complete the lead form without typing something. And it might take them 30 seconds, a minute, 2 minutes before they can actually complete it. When we look at basic things like that, we can determine, okay, that can't be a human, right? It can't be real. It's really about just having better analytics. Google Analytics probably can't tell you this because they're not focused on tracking keystrokes, tracking time on site and all that. They have a few of those things, but it's really not that good at detecting bot activity. So if you have better analytics on your landing pages, on your form pages, you can tell some of this, right? Some of it's so obvious. You can say, okay, that's clearly not a lead that we want to buy.
Wow, it's sophisticated.
Yeah. A more recent example is you probably heard of these scalper bots. They would basically scalp the tickets, basically. They would buy up all of Taylor Swift's tickets within 15 minutes of launch for the purpose of reselling them for 5 times the money afterwards. So the bots can actually complete a transaction. I think a lot of people might assume that bots don't buy stuff because they're not going to spend their own money. But if there's a motive or incentive, bad guys can use bots to defeat captchas, buy up Taylor Swift's tickets for the purpose of reselling them. In fact, there was a news item just yesterday where they were saying they finally caught a few of those hackers that bought up hundreds of Taylor Swift tickets and then tried to resell them. And that's how they got caught. But this is basically an automated system where they're using bots to complete those ticket purchases so that they can resell them on the aftermarket.
Whatever happened to just having a real job?
That's right. That's right.
So as the ad fraud tactics evolve, have you seen specific marketing channels or platforms that are more vulnerable to the bot activity?
If you've seen as much as I've seen, every single channel is vulnerable, right? Like I mentioned earlier, every single form of digital advertising, those four buckets, those four revenue types, all have flavors of fraud that affect it. It's just a matter of whether the bots are sophisticated enough, whether there's enough money to be made. So in certain verticals, when, say, a pharmaceutical company or financial services company is willing to pay a lot per lead, $100, $500 per lead, that makes it a very attractive target for the bad guys to focus their bot activity on that. So that's, again, the best practice is always to double check, not just assume that the leads you're getting are real, even if it's a real street address. Over the years, I've seen people check, oh, is this a real street address that exists in Columbus, Ohio or something? Okay, those things check out. They're going to check out, but that still doesn't mean the lead is real. So it's always about challenging your own assumptions and having a way to double check the data and not just rely on the platform that you're buying from. Right, because they may not be deliberately lying, but they may also not know that those are fraudulent leads or fraudulent activities.
Right. And it doesn't seem like the direct advertiser would have much recourse.
Yeah, ultimately, even as far back as 2013, when I talked about the university marketers, they had to routinely discard 50 to 70% of their leads because they were not real. But it became laborious because they had to follow up and call them to then determine it was not real.
Time.
So I think you just need to layer in additional things. Like I said, if we have analytics on the site that showed that the form fill was done in 1 second and without any keystrokes, there's something wrong with that. And in my world, when we look at the ads, if there are clicks, but there's no touch on the screen, that's also not real, right? So on a smartphone, a human has to touch the screen. So we should record a touch event before we see a click. If we see a click without a corresponding touch, something's wrong with that. So I've written about some of these examples on my LinkedIn, and there's some screenshots and screen capture, so you can actually see some of this going on.
So if a direct advertiser adopts your service, do they use that to go back in order to get credit for the traffic that they paid for that's not real? Are they able to
Yeah,
keep back?
A lot of times that's how they do it, right? They try to go back and get a refund or something like that. But I think it's better to have prevented it in the first place and not have paid for it. Because again, the way to think about it is once the money's in the bad guy's pockets, you're never getting it back.
Yeah, you're never getting
right?
that.
I'll give you an example. Uber in 2016 found out that they were being ripped off by 100 mobile exchanges. So at the time, Uber was paying for installs, right? They were running what we call a CPI campaign, a cost per install campaign. So every install that they got of the Uber app, they would pay out a bounty like $5, $10. So what the mobile exchanges were doing is basically creating the reports that made it look like they caused millions upon millions of app installs.
Wow.
This was discovered not by tech, but by just best practice, right? So an analytics person, Kevin Frisch, who worked at Uber at the time, said, let's run a turn off experiment. Let's just pause the CPI campaign for a week and see what happens. They turned it off. All the app installs continued because they were not driven by the campaign. They were people who installed Uber app because they wanted to, not because they saw an ad and clicked on it. So then he said, let's leave it off for a second week. All the app installs continued. So then he said, we're cutting all of this because all of these installs were organic installs, right? People just installed it naturally, not because they saw an ad.
Mm-hmm.
And then they ended up suing 100 mobile exchanges. And now we're like, how many years? 9 years later, most of those exchanges have died and gone away. They literally made off with the money. There's nobody to get the money back from.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the long story that we can learn from. It's better to actually say, okay, when we see that these form fills were happening too quickly, we're not going to pay for it in the first place, rather than try to get our money back afterwards, because you're not going to be able to.
So if a direct advertiser is using your service, which I'm familiar with, explain how they use it in order to head that more or less off at the path.
Sure. So my platform is called Foo Analytics. It's something that I started building about 14 years ago. And initially, it was used to audit campaigns just to see if there are these kind of problems that we could see and then help head off. But the way the advertisers use it now, so in 2020, I opened up the platform so others can use it. So just like you log into Google Analytics dashboard yourself, you will log into Foo Analytics dashboard yourself and then look at the data. And there's two parts to Foo Analytics. One is what we call in-ad measurement to measure the ads. And the second is on-site measurement to measure the sites. So the in-ad measurement is typically riding along with the ad impression. And you would just copy and paste the tag into whatever DSP you happen to be using. And the idea there is that we want to see where the ads are going and whether those ads are being loaded by some fraudulent means, for example, bot, right? Or for example, a flashlight app that's continuously loading ads in the background. Those are not good ads for you to buy.
Okay.
In those cases, when we see that, we simply add the site or the mobile app to a block list. And that way your ads won't go to them anymore, right? That's how you prevent it from happening. And so if you block those fraudulent sites and apps, then more of your dollars and ads can go to better sites and apps, hopefully real ones, right? So that's how you can prevent the ads from going to bad places. And then on the site, we'll do
And
what we just talked about.
Do you work with the DSP to give them the block list?
Yeah, we can either do it in an automated way, or
Okay.
there can be a human analyst who will go in there. Some of these lists of sites could be hundreds of thousands of sites long, but you don't have to deal with that all the time. Because think about it, if a site is eating up 10 impressions, it doesn't matter. You want to take out a site that's eating up 10 million impressions, because that is significantly, right? It's a fraudulent site. It's eating up 10 million of your impressions. That's a very significant chunk of money.
Yes.
So the way to think about it is every week you can go in there and look at the top 10 bad guys and decide whether you want to take them out or not. And the simple thing is, if you say, okay, this is clearly a fake site or fake app, let me copy and paste that and send that to our agency or send that to the DSP, and they would add it to a block list.
Okay.
So you don't have to handle tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands. It's really the top 10 or 20 bad guys that you have to clean out every week. And then on top of that, after the ad impressions, you can then have a code on the landing page to measure the quality of the clicks that come through from whatever marketing channel. There are certain channels like Facebook or YouTube where we are not allowed to measure the ad impressions themselves. So we have to look at the clicks that come from those channels to see if they're bot clicks or they're real human clicks. And again, based on that data measured on the landing page with an on-site tag, you can then say, okay, we can either turn off the channel or block certain sites or apps that are part of that channel, right? And therefore clean up the campaign a bit more. That's how an advertiser would typically use the Food Analytics platform, both in-ad and on-site.
And do you get pushback outside of the end user? Do the agencies, are they interested in this service, or are they?
Yeah, increasingly.
Okay.
Yeah, I think in years past, in the last 15 years, the most challenging hurdle was to really get overcome the desire to buy more and more quantity, right? So both the advertiser and the agency were looking for more reach, more frequency. So it became a game of buying as much tonnage as possible at as low a CPM price as possible. And inevitably, that drove them to buy bad ads from bad places. Over time, I think they're now realizing, okay, we can buy far fewer ad impressions. Even if we pay a higher CPM, we're still going to be saving money because we're not sending so many billions of impressions to literally outright bot traffic. So I think we're finally seeing a turnaround, and the agencies are more receptive to it. And if you also think about the concept of fraud detection versus analytics, fraud detection, like what's been done in the last 10 years, is you're just relying on a vendor to tell you how much, what percentage of your impressions were fraud or not. And if they keep telling you it's 1%, most of the advertisers and the agencies would not have taken any kind of action, because 1% fraud is below the threshold of action or needed action.
Sure.
So most of them didn't really take care of it. But now when they put a Food Analytics tag into a campaign, it might be 50% red because they couldn't see it before. But again, it's not cause for panic, right? If you can see where the fraud is coming from, you can do something about it. And again, going back to what we said earlier, when you see the bad sites and apps, you take those and put it in the block list. And that's how you progressively clean your campaign, right? It won't drop to zero overnight. You still have to be vigilant and work at it. But I think that's a kind of a path forward for you to clean up the campaign and basically take action where you couldn't take action before. So that's the difference between just having black box fraud detection versus having better analytics that you could look at and understand why something is fraudulent or not, right?
And I would think that the agencies might start becoming more interested in what you're doing, because I think there's a lot of pushback coming from the brands of I'm spending all this money and what do I show for it? The ROI is not there.
That gets to a really good point, and you touched upon it earlier with the word attribution, right? So there have been cases, and more recently, where they're saying the ROAS is so awesome with this, we have to keep increasing our ad spend in here. And I'll just use an anonymous case example, a national hotel chain. They were looking at their own DoubleClick campaign reporting and saying, the ROAS is so awesome here. Let's keep pouring more money. Let's take money from other channels. Let's keep pouring it into this channel because the ROAS looks so good. But looking at the ROAS, ro return on ad spend in the DoubleClick conversion reporting is very different than looking at, did you actually get bookings for the hotel chain? And what was happening in this case was what I'm going to call attribution fraud. So there were outcomes. There were people who actually booked hotel rooms, but it wasn't caused by seeing an ad. Joe, remember the Uber example?
Yes.
The people installed the Uber app because they wanted to install the Uber app, right? That's an organic install, not because they saw an ad from these mobile exchanges and clicked on it. So same thing was happening. People were making those bookings because they were already familiar with the hotel chain and they're going to book anyway. What was happening is that the ad tech company was falsifying the attribution. And it's not even that hard. All you have to do is load the landing page, which has all these conversion pixels on it. And once those conversion pixels and trackers fire, it marks that device as exposed, meaning exposed to the ad. So then there's this concept of view-through conversion, which is even if the person didn't act right away, meaning they didn't click on the ad, they must have seen it. And any conversion event that happens, or sale or booking or whatever that happens 30, 60, or 90 days afterwards, now gets attributed to the ad. So the platforms, fraudsters have all found out how to game the system by tricking the attribution to make it look like many of those bookings were caused by ads run on their platform. So, in the eyes of the advertiser, they kept pointing to those DoubleClick reports. Wow, the ROAS is so awesome. We have to keep spending here. But as it turns out, none of it was incremental, which is the bookings or the sales that would have happened in the absence of the advertising. So, once they figured that out, and once they figured out how the bad guys were loading the landing pages with hidden browsers, they were using my tech. We could see that in the data. They said, oh, now we understand this is not incremental. Even if we turn off this campaign, and they actually did turn off that campaign, the bookings continued. So then it became clear
So
it
there was
was
the
the
proof.
bookings were not caused by that campaign.
How do people get in touch with you? Because you provide such a valuable service, and I've known you for a little while now. How do they, first of all, I know you have your LinkedIn.
They can Google my name and
Okay.
my primary, they can see a lot of my writing on LinkedIn. And they'll see that the articles, I have over 800 articles from the past 15 years.
Okay.
It's all about the phenomenon of fraud, right? Across those four categories that we talked about before. They can see case examples, screenshots from the Food Analytics dashboard. So it makes it more concrete for them. And more recently, they'll see articles about this kind of attribution fraud. There's many flavors of it. And I think if they start understanding that, it'll give them clues about how to look at their own campaigns and see if some of these things are actually impacting their campaign. And then they're welcome to reach out and actually use Foo Analytics either to measure their ads or to measure their sites or both. And we'll show them. I usually do no cost pilots so that they can actually get some of their own data to look at. Now, there may be cases where they're simply not affected by any form of fraud, and that would be a great outcome for them to see that. But in most cases, we do some. Do find some things that they simply were not aware of, and that gives us the opportunity to help them optimize it and make their campaigns better.
And it's good to validate, even that would be the
Yeah.
good news. It's always good to have validation. But
Yeah.
so it's Dr. Augustine Fu, his last name is FOU. And what is your email address, Dr. Fu?
Just my first name dot last name, Augustine with an E dot FOU at Foo Analytics, FOU Analytics with an S dot com.
Okay. And I think it's considering the millions of dollars that people are spending, it's well worth it to spend some time with you. Is there a Can smaller advertise? What kind of volume do you think people need to be doing to be able to effectively use your service?
Yeah, I actually leave Food Analytics free for small and medium sites. So anything under 100,000 web page visits per month, they're welcome to use it for free. They just have to contact me and set up an account. It's a
That's
self-service free account. Basically, 15 years ago when I started out, I was using Google Analytics because I
okay.
couldn't afford anything else. So I decided to leave it free for small businesses. And my primary customers are the large advertisers and some agency groups. And they're basically paying an annual subscription, Microsoft Office or Google Analytics Enterprise. It's just a set of tools for them to use. So I teach them how to use Food Analytics, and they can use it to monitor their own campaigns and make sure everything's running smoothly and to spec.
I think it's awesome because people spend their hard-earned dollars. They want value for it. And I think you definitely provide a valuable service. So I want to thank you for spending time with us today.
Thank
And
you, Paula.
people can reach you at augustine.fou at Foo Analytics, correct?
Yes, thank you, Paula.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Fu.
Great to
See
talk with you.
you soon.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Paula Keoki, and thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, share it on social media, and don't forget to rate or review the podcast wherever you listen. Your feedback helps us grow and inspire others. If you're a successful business leader or marketing professional with insights to share, we'd love to feature you as a guest. Visit outwardmedia.com/podcast to learn more. Make sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode, and connect with us on social media to join the conversation. Visit outwardmedia.com to explore how we can help take your strategic audience building to the next level. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.